This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's our Race for the First series. Each Monday, we introduce you to a primary candidate for New Hampshire's first congressional district. With no incumbent running in this swing district, it's no surprise there are lots of hopefuls vying for their party's nomination, 8 Democrats and 2 Republicans. Now, let's get you into this series, especially if you live in the first district. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Contact us on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also watch our interview today on Facebook Live. Our candidate is Daeglin McEachran. He's a Democrat from Portsmouth, a New Hampshire native, and a businessman working in the tech sector. And Mr. McEachran, welcome. It's nice to meet you.
Laura, it's great to be here and quite an honor to be on The Exchange.
Well, lots of Democrats running, 8 at last count. Give us your best 30-second pitch, Mr. McEachran, on why you're the best one out of all the 8.
Yeah, well, Laura, I'm talking about the fact there's 2 New Hampshires here. There's a New Hampshire that sees 2.5% unemployment as the best thing indicative of economic growth and opportunity. And there's another New Hampshire, a New Hampshire that is a hospital trip away from a financial emergency or is addicted to opioids or alcohol and can't get the mental health they need. I'm talking about the future of jobs and how we're not preparing that next generation for those jobs. And I'm really proud to be a progressive because I feel progressive issues are what this Democratic Party needs to create the opportunities that I had for my daughter and everybody's child here in New Hampshire.
A couple progressives running. We've interviewed several already. So again, how do you sort of differentiate yourself from the other candidates? What makes you special?
Yeah, so I think it's that I'm putting progressive values in how are we doing good, but also doing well. When I'm talking about healthcare, and this is a personal issue for me, my wife got really sick and she's better now, but that was 2 years of trying to figure out what was wrong and how were you going to pay for it and could we afford rent, credit cards, and health insurance. And the answer to that was no, we couldn't. And I tell that story because I want the listeners to know how passionate I am about fixing this, but I'm talking about it in a different way. I'm talking about it in terms that if you're a small business owner, this is one of the biggest expenses that you're going to face, that how are you going to pay for insurance, not just for your employees, but for yourselves. And that's something that I don't hear the other candidates talking about. And I also don't hear the other candidates talking about the future of jobs, how technology is changing everything, and how we need to invest in education to make sure that everybody's ready for the information economy. And I think that we can, after watching Mr. Zuckerberg on Capitol Hill, agree that there's not a whole lot of people in Congress that understand the revenue model of the information economy. And I want to make sure that we do, because that's going to affect a lot of what's coming down the future of jobs, especially here in New Hampshire.
Well, I definitely want to talk to you about Mark Zuckerberg's testimony, because you are a high-tech guy. But another news item first, Mr. McEachran, please, that you would face if you were a member of Congress, that members of Congress faced last week, Syria and the U.S. joining allies with airstrikes on Syria's chemical weapons network. Now, members of New Hampshire's congressional delegation, as I'm sure you know, all said they felt the attacks were appropriate, that it was the right choice, but some also said the president needs to ask Congress for an authorization of military force. How do you feel about that? Should the president have to ask Congress in a sort of very quick, fast-moving situation like this?
Yeah, well, I think that Congress always wants to be asked. And the president, you know, if it's a Democratic president, a Republican president, they don't very much care to ask. And they haven't, on both sides, haven't really looked for prior authorization or approval. I think in Congress, we should focus on what Congress actually owns. And, you know, the Constitution embeds in us the ability to control economic trade with our allies and really use that in terms of sanctions and to be sanctioning Russia, not just for their involvement in Syria, but their involvement with meddling in our elections. And I think as a congressman, I would very much want to extend our foreign diplomacy when it comes to enacting sanctions on countries that, you know, are acting aggressively to us or others.
Well, you mentioned Mark Zuckerberg's testimony, and I'm sure you were watching that, again, as someone who works in this industry. Just broadly first, please, what's your take on this whole Facebook data scandal and Congress being shocked that Facebook is sharing your personal information?
Yeah, so this is really important, and I thought that there were some good intro questions, you know, and you're really good at asking questions. And you're really good, though, at asking follow-up questions. And I saw a lot of Congress ask a decent intro question. I know, I think it was Orrin Hatch who got in trouble for asking, you know, how do you make money? And that would have been a simple question if they could have followed that up with, well, why are you so good at selling ads? Why are you so good at targeting ads? What kind of information are you getting from your customers and your users in order to be so effective at that? And if you are getting personal and private data, what are you doing to safeguard that? And how does that relate to Cambridge Analytica? These were all follow-up questions that I know the staffers were writing decent, good questions to open that up. It just, it lacked a fundamental understanding of how the revenue model works for the internet. And basically, we get it for free and we get content for free, but we give up our personal and private data. And we were very upset with the NSA taking all this data 2 years ago, and yet we freely give it up. And we should understand that and understand that better and have more safeguards and a privacy bill of rights for us as Americans to know that that data is going to be safely used.
Well, we're going to talk about Facebook tomorrow on the show, but a couple more questions for you on this, because, again, this is an area of expertise for you. At the hearing, Zuckerberg was asked about European privacy rules, apparently a lot tighter than what we have in this country. Some members of Congress said, hey, maybe we should adopt this. Mr. Zuckerberg seemed to hedge a little bit, saying this could restrict innovation. I wonder what you think.
Yeah, so I like what the GDPR is doing over there. I think that we should bring that here to the United
States.
And
what is that?
So the General Data Privacy Rule. And I think that we should have more privacy protections here in the United States. Not just, and I want to be clear that Facebook and the tech community was pretty silent. They let Facebook and Zuckerberg take all the hits on this. But Google has just as much data, if not more, than Facebook. When we talk about Equifax, there's a lot of data that was released in Equifax. We should hold companies accountable so that they don't, after the fact, go on an apology tour just to say sorry and have a big mea culpa for releasing all of our data. We should have much more stringent and enforcement procedures for when there is a data breach, when we are not protecting that data. And that's something that I would fight for, and I'd hope that everybody else in this race would fight for as well.
Well, speaking of tech and business, you founded the group New Hampshire for Amazon, seeking to convince Amazon to choose New Hampshire for its HQ2, second big headquarters. Obviously, as everybody knows, we didn't quite make it. But what are some of the biggest barriers to attracting businesses to New Hampshire, especially based on this experience that you had?
Yeah. So, and Laura, I want to put that in context just a little. I saw the media attention that Amazon was getting because of this. And I was able to talk to, you know, one of your colleagues, Dan, because of this. And I saw there was a huge opportunity to show where New Hampshire kind of stacked up and where it fell short in terms of attracting businesses. And it really comes down for me two things. One, we need an educated workforce. You know, if we're not willing to invest in New Hampshire in terms of full day kindergarten for everyone, it's difficult to convince other companies to invest in us as well. And two, transportation. We need rail in New Hampshire. And I know that there's been a lot of politicians that have tried to get Republican governors to take the $4 million to do a rail study here in New Hampshire. And I will put a feather in my cap and say we got, you know, Governor Sununu to at least change his mind for a week. He changed it back after Amazon didn't pick us. But all of this was designed so that we could show New Hampshire where we need innovation and where we need investment to attract companies. And
well,
I think we started that.
Some analysts have said, why make the investment in rail? It's the technology of 100 years ago. The way transportation's going now, it's all self-driving cars. So why would we even, you know, expect people to take rail when they seem to be gravitating towards autonomous vehicles?
You know, autonomous vehicles, and they certainly could be, they could be around the corner. I think rail is always going to serve a portion because of the fact that there needs to be, where are you going to put those cars in the city when you get there? You know, are they going to then drive themselves and self-park in some other location? Possibly. I think rail is a very good investment because of the fact that it would get people where there is lower cost of housing and a better quality of life, down to where there are jobs and the ability to, you know, really afford everything that goes with, being a human being these days.
Mr. McEachran, let's go to our listeners. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. It's our Race for the First series today in The Exchange. We're talking with Deglan McEachran about his bid for the first congressional district here in New Hampshire. And let's go to Kathleen in Peterborough. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thanks, Laura.
Sure.
Mr. McEachran, question for you.
You're
following some big shoes there Carol Shea Porter has filled, and with a lot of seniors in New Hampshire, where do you stand on strengthening and securing Social Security and Medicare?
Thank you, Kathleen, for the call.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate the question. So, one, I think that how we fund Social Security right now, I think we should remove the cap of $112,000. And so that would strengthen it right away. And it would also send a message that we value labor as much as we value capital in this country. And two, when it comes to Medicare, I believe in a Medicare for All system. And I think that's the easiest way to ensure that you, if your single issue is Medicare, that you're going to get everybody to want to protect this system. Right now, we have what I call rental car health care, because an insurance provider allows, you know, you're on an insurance plan for 3 to 5 years. And you know, and they know at the end of that, you're going to be on Medicare. Well, Medicare can't control a lot of the costs that are starting earlier on in your life. You know, diabetes. If you need an insulin pump when you're 65 years old, you should have been having more aggressive treatment in your 30s, 40s, and 50s. And so if we want to bend the cost curve, if we want to lower the cost to provide Medicare in this country, I think we need to expand it to everyone.
And so Medicare for All, that's what Bernie Sanders advocated.
It is.
Election.
It is. And, you know, that's a really good starting point. I really believe this is the tapeworm on our economy, to steal Warren Buffett's saying.
The tapeworm on our economy.
The tapeworm on our economy. Well, we have 18% of GDP and it's rising. And there's no way we get around that. So it's not just Bernie Sanders that's talking about this, Laura. There's Warren Buffett, who's joined with Jamie Dimon. You might know him as that small community banker down in New York for J.P. Morgan Chase. And Jeff Bezos, who might have delivered, you know, any one of us or your listeners a package. They said about a month and a half ago that they're removing their employees from the private health market because it's too expensive. If it's too expensive for the richest men in America to provide health care coverage on the private market to their employees, how's a small business going to afford it? How are we going to afford it? That's something that we need to be talking about to independents and Republicans, that this is a very, I believe, bipartisan issue.
How much would it take in terms of tax increases? These systems are not free, and Europeans pay a lot more in taxes than Americans. Now, they get the health insurance, and so people I know
favorite,
in Europe say they're happy to do it. But, you know, Americans don't love paying taxes, especially for someone else's health care, so to speak.
Yeah, we don't love paying taxes. You're right about that. And we talk about taxes as just a cost. But we're paying for health care. So I love this argument that we are going to – how are we going to pay for it? Well, I paid for it. When my wife got sick, we automatically had our $5,000 deductible taken because it was viewed as an outpatient. We then had another $6,000 in total out-of-pocket costs that we had. You know, I will stack that up against any tax increase that I would face in that and show that when you get sick in this country, when you can't pay for something in this country, that's when you have to. And I don't believe that's a fair system. In Canada, their tax is about 3% higher than we have here in the United States in terms of tax burden, but they're not paying for health insurance. I think that's a big thing. As Democrats, we got to talk about the benefits. We can't fall into the Republican trap of listing out all of the costs. We got to say, what are we allowed to do and how is this going to benefit Americans? And that's what I'm willing to do. I'm not waiting for something to get to 54% before I'm talking about it. I'm leading on this
well,
issue.
We could talk for another hour on this for
and
sure.
I hope to come back and talk as the nominee.
A couple other issues that I want to ask you about. And one is guns. As a New Hampshire native, you know that this state typically has had a hands-off approach to gun regulations. We have some, but not a lot. Did you grow up hunting or handling guns? You grew up in this state.
I grew up in this state. My grandfather took me shooting. My father's not a fan of guns. For me, this issue is different as a parent, I think, than it ever was, without kids. But my daughter's going to go to the same elementary school that I did. You know, she's going to go to the same classroom from kindergarten that I went to. And she's going to know where the finger paints are, and she's going to know where the macaroni necklaces are. But she's also going to know where to hide in case of an active shooter. And that's really hard for me to comprehend. She's 1.5 years old. I have 3.5 years to figure out what I'm going to say to her when she comes home after being taught to be a victim. And I promise myself that I'm going to talk more than just here's where to hide and daddy and mommy are going to be here and we're going to be there very soon if that ever happens. We need gun reform in this country.
So what would you do? What specific legislation would you support?
So an assault weapons ban, I would support that. I would support background checks and closing the gun show loophole. I would also support and bump stocks and high capacity magazines. But I would support a background check on bullets. You know, we're not going to take these guns away. There's 5 to 9 million AR-15s out there. We have no idea if there are 5 million or 9 million AR-15s. That's off by 4 million. That's hard to think that we're going to ever get these off the street. But I'd like a background check on bullets. So if you're going to buy, you know, hundreds of rounds of ammunition and there's a red flag law that shows that, you know, since you bought a gun, you've also started beating your partner. That's something that I think we should know about.
So that's other legislation that you would support, these red flag laws that yep. a few other states are adopting. And there was a gun rights rally just this weekend in Concord. I was downtown, happened to see a bunch of folks with their guns and giving speeches and so forth. And they're really opposed to any of these measures that you talk about. How are you going to reach out to the other side on this issue?
Well, my job is not to... Sometimes I think as politicians, we have to agree on everything. And we're not going to agree on everything. My job is to show somebody that I disagree on the issue of guns, of why I believe in this issue, why I am passionate about this issue, and try to find a common ground with them. You know, in a lot of ways, we don't. They believe the Second Amendment is the check on the government. I believe the First Amendment is our check on the government and using the ballot. And if they don't like what I have to say, you know, they can vote for somebody else. But my job is to make sure that I'm able to tell my daughter when she starts elementary school in 3.5 years, everything that her father and her mother did.
One last very quick question. Paul McEachran, your dad, a familiar name to some Democrats. He's run for office in New Hampshire, been active for a long time. Has he given you any political advice?
He didn't tell me to do this, but he led by his example that if you want to make change in this country, you got to run for something and you got to fight for something. And I've seen that my entire life, and he's a hero of mine. So he's given me a little advice, but he's certainly given me a lot more in the example and the life that he's chosen to live.
Well, it's nice to meet you. Thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Laura, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Deglan McEachran, again, he is a Democrat running for the 1st Congressional District. Now, on April 30th, our Race for the First series will continue. We'll be sitting down with Democratic candidate Levy Sanders. All of these interviews with our 1st District candidates are on our website and on our Facebook page. You can listen and watch on Facebook Live.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.